Thank you. Oh my goodness. You guys have got to smile and cheer for me because I got to take a picture of this crowd. You are amazing. Come on. All right. Okay, let me take one this way. This is so huge. I have never seen anything like this. Okay, smiles, cheers. All right. Yay. Excellent. Okay. That is fantastic. I am so happy to be here. How's the morning gone? Great. Wonderful. Okay, you feeling full of power? Okay. All right. You're going to have even more before you leave here today. And I have a question. Actually, I have several questions for you. Do you think it's still true that there's a glass ceiling? Yes? Whoa, that was pretty much almost universal. Interesting. Well, ladies, take your power seats, because we're going on a ride here. So just imagine for one moment, in the spirit of the theme of this conference, imagine what would it be like if men and women held equal positions of power and leadership? Wow, what do you think? Would it be better? How many think it would be better? Let's stop there. That's great. I think it would be better actually for everybody, for women, men, for families, for the world, and for a whole lot of reasons, and we're going to talk about that. So then the next question I need to ask you is, how much do you like power? Now, if you're thinking of a scale from 1 to 10, and one is over here, power has negative connotations for me. Oh, I can't get away from the, sorry, I forget. I'm usually wearing a lavalier, so I move away from the mic. One being way over here, power has negative connotations for me. And 10 being way over here, I love it, I crave it, I can't get enough of it, give me more. And, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 being, I'm ambivalent a little bit about it. I have some issues. I realize I need to deal with it. How many of you would be perfect 10s? All right. Let us applaud the perfect 10s. Let us applaud the perfect 10s. And we'll do a post test and see how many more of you have moved toward the 10 end of it. There's no right answer to that question. But I do believe that women's relationship with power is the fundamental block. We have open doors, but you got to walk yourself through them. Nobody will step aside for you. And that requires a willingness to embrace power and walk with intention to where we believe our purpose in life is, to where we believe we will thrive and grow and be able to contribute our very best to this world. So that's really my mission today. And I want to start by asking you a question. When did you know you had the power to? And you fill in the blank. And now, I know this is risky to do this in a room of this many women, but I'm going to ask you to turn to the person next to you and in 15 seconds tell her when you knew you had the power to, and then switch and let her tell you. Okay? Go. First one. When did you know you had the power to? Okay. All right. What? What's the Girl Scout sign? All right. My friends, sisters, women, you're well behaved in Boston. I couldn't get him to shut up in Pennsylvania. Thank you. I hope that that was an interesting exercise, even though it was very short, because our time is very limited here. But I will come back to that question, so hold your thought. And it's a very serious one, and one that I will ask you to come back to and literally write down on a worksheet when we get a little further on along the way. But I want to talk first about this question. So we hear from all corners that it's women's moment. You know, the end of men has predictably been predicted, and everybody's talking about how women are taking over the world. And so it's a sort of been an evolutionary process. I'm not too sure about the mustache on this woman. I think maybe there's a little bit of evolving we have yet to do. Because when we started out entering particularly the male-dominated workforce that was designed by men for men who had wives at home taking care of everything, women often did sort of try to wear men's clothes and attitudes. And now I think we're in a very different place where the world is waking up to the fact that it's really the distinctive leadership skills and proclivities that women bring that are most needed. But we need to take a quick check of where we are, because since doors are open and since we have seen a woman first almost everything, sometimes it's easy to believe that all problems have been solved. So where are we? 85-15. Anybody have an idea what that might mean? Women buy 85% of the consumer goods. We got the power of the purse if we use it. We are 15% of the boards of directors of the companies that decide what we get to choose from. Now, I want women's suits to have like nice pockets like men's do, so I don't have to carry a purse. There's stuff like that I'd like to have, and I'd like to know if you would all be willing to join together with me with our 85% power of the purse, and let's fix that. We could change everything about consumer products if we want to. So the next set of figures is 54-18 now. Women are 54% of the voters. We are 18% of Congress. We did move up from 17% to 18%. You know, there's a lot of hoopla about how many women won this year. Well, it's a good thing, but still, 18%? I don't think so. 57% of college graduates are women now. We're 50% of the workplace. But we have been stuck at 18% of the top leadership positions across all sectors for over two decades. Women earn 77 cents to men's dollar. That's the one of these pairs that almost everybody seems to know. And it costs us between $500,000 and $1 million each over the course of our working life. Because not only do we get paid less than men for the same jobs still, the pay gap actually starts the first year out of college. I don't know if you've seen AAUW's recent study, but the pay gap is not as large as 77 cents to a dollar, but it starts the first year out of college. And a lot of it has to do with something that I'm going to show you next. So, 15 and 15 is not a matched pair I would expect you to know. But I'm on the board of the Women's Media Center, and I do a lot of work with women in media. And we have done a lot of complaining over time about how women only get 15% of the bylines in major newspapers on the opinion pages. And the problem is that when the research was done, what we found was this. Women only submitted 15%. So what's the moral of the story? You can't get your op-ed published if you don't submit it. The same thing was true with women in politics. You can't win if you don't run. And now women win at the same ratio that men do when they run. But we cannot increase that number unless we're out there running, and so on down the line in the business world. So the good news is these are learnable and teachable skills. We have to learn to ask for our initial salary. We need to learn to toot our own horns, to tell people the good work that we're doing so that we get promoted when we want to. And with the issue of op-eds, it's interesting because the Op-Ed Project has been teaching women to pitch op-eds now for about 10 years, and that number has increased from 15 to 21%. So that took too long, in my opinion, but it still shows that we can learn these skills, and that, I'm sure, has to do with why many of you are here today, and I want to applaud you for that. The power is in our hands. You saw those numbers. Big consulting firms, Ernst & Young, McKinsey, many others, have found that those companies with more women in their upper echelons make more money. So there's a great business case. The World Bank has looked at parliaments all around the world, and they say that those with more women make better decisions and have a better decision-making process. So we have a tremendous amount of power in our hands. But, my friends, power unused is power useless. You know, if we don't use that 85% purchasing power, what good does it do us? If we don't use that 54% voting power, what good does it do us? That's the key. Now, there are many reasons for these discrepancies. But as I wrote in my most recent book, No Excuses, there just aren't any of those anymore. There aren't any excuses. We really have all the capabilities we need right here in our hands. But what I want to share with you is this. Nobody is born knowing these things. This is a picture of me with my oldest child, Tammy. I was 16 years old. I grew up in rural West Texas, where the culture told me that what women should do is marry young, have lots of babies, take care of the house, and I wanted to do that. I wanted to be that perfect woman that the culture told me, albeit I decided to do it a little too early, kind of annoyed my parents a bit. But, you know, that was probably the time when I felt the most alone, the least powerful, the most vulnerable. And I feel like having had that experience has really helped me and informed me in understanding and really wanting to help other women achieve much greater levels of power and mastery over their own lives. Now, I really did think I wanted to do that behind the picket fence thing, but, well, this is kind of how it was. And it was a long journey from that 16-year-old terrified young mom who had three children by the time she was 20. And then sort of a light bulb went off in my head for some reason. And my son has heard me tell this story so much he calls himself Mom's Light Bulb. But I started to college at that point. And though it took me 12 years to finish, in the course of that 12 years, I had many opportunities that I am so incredibly grateful for that led me ultimately to be named one of Vanity Fair's top 200 women leaders, legends, and trailblazers. And getting photographed by Annie Leibovitz is one of the highlights of one's life. But even so, I don't think I had really grappled with the whole issue of women and power. Now, during that in-between period when I was, when I'd started to college and I was managing three kids at home and a husband and, trying to, live the picket fence life, I got involved in a lot of community service work. And it was in the era of the civil rights movement's biggest impact. And when I learned about this woman, Sojourner Truth, who said, if women want more rights than they've got, why don't they just take them? That was one of my first and most profound lessons. Because if you think about it, who could have started out life with less power? She was born a slave. She had, I think, 13 children, of whom five lived to adulthood, and most of whom she saw sold off to other plantations. She walked away, she said. She said, I didn't run away. I walked away from slavery. And she became a Methodist minister, a leading women's rights leader. And actually, when she was in her, I think, 70s or 80s, she got herself arrested by trying to vote in Washington, D.C. So Sojourner Truth became my model. But I still had a lot of learning to do. And after I had left, I served at Planned Parenthood for 30 years, first as affiliate CEO in two different locations, and then as the national president. And after I left, I sort of turned into a little puddle of jelly because suddenly I didn't have a structure in my life. And my plan was to write books, but I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I was persuaded to write this book with Kathleen Turner, the actress. I love Kathleen. I adore her. We have a completely 50-50 relationship. We're still very good friends. But what happened was this. She was my friend. I brought her to the table, got her to do this book with the publisher, and I was being treated rather well at that point. Well, after I wrote the book, and we went for the publisher's big publicity meeting where they decide what you're going to do when the book is launched, we were both there, all excited. The publicist literally turned his back to me and looked only at Kathleen. And it was in that moment that I finally had my real confrontation with, all right, Gloria, you've done it again. You know, when you were a kid, you did what the culture wanted you to do. As a grown-up woman, you let yourself get subsumed by a cause you believed in, but you've never spoken in your own voice. And this was actually the moment when I realized you gotta do your own thing. At some point, you gotta let your own authentic voice come out. And so this was my what I call my full frontal confrontation with my own power resistance. Well, why does this happen? It is said that when a baby elephant is trained in captivity, that it learns when it's tethered to a post that it can only move within the space that the tether allows it to move. And later on, when it becomes a large and powerful animal, and it could actually uproot the post or break the tether, it doesn't know that. So it thinks when it's tethered to the post that it can just only still move in that little constricted area. And I think what we women have to do is identify. Do you think you have some baby elephant thinking in your mind? Yes? I certainly do. So if we can identify that, and then we can move past it, that's when we can make significant progress. And I want to also share with you something else very profound, because one of the reasons why women have this ambivalence about power, I found in my work, is that we think of it as being power over. We think of it in a negative sort of way. Well, there's a good reason for that, because we have borne the brunt of discrimination. We have often borne the brunt of abuse, physical, sexual, verbal abuse. So there's a reason why we have that negative attitude. And so I wanted to just share with you the story of my friend Brooke Axtell, who was very seriously sexually abused as a child and came out of it incredibly strong. And it's so hard to do, but I think as women we also have to address that even if it's only been a pinch on the butt or, you know, kind of a pat on the head, there have been times that we have experienced these kinds of dismissals and even abuse. I want to share with you this incredibly beautiful poem that Brooke wrote. It's called Voice Lessons. The women here are in need of voice lessons. Breath controllers ride and thrust, demeaning the fullness. Upon us the force is early applied, and quickly we learn the ways of silence. My body, which is the body of all women, is the raw material for production, consumption, eroticize the inequality, bank on it, sexy industry. The message is bullhorning clear. This is who you are. This is why you are here, to be pleasing according to the shifting demands of man, until the only power becomes that of seduction. How my mind is an axe, my heart a voluptuous cup overflowing, my soul a holy siren. What I am cannot be contained on your magazine page. What I am cannot be shamed into submission. I decline subscription. You will not win this one. And that, my friends, we have to deal with too, as we change how we think about power. Power is like a hammer. You can build something with it, or you can break something apart. And what I'm asking you to do, and I think this is very profound, because I believe our relationship with power is profound, and even to the spiritual. From that oppressive power over to power to, because power over implies forcing or denying. Power to enables you to solve problems. It's about innovation. Is anybody here Greek? Is anybody here? I have to ask Ariana Huffington, because her sister told me that the word power actually comes from a Greek root, which means possibility. And I love that. So power is possibility. Power over implies that there's a finite pie, and if I take a slice, there's less for you. Power two realizes power is an infinite resource, and the more there is, the more there is, and the more we help each other have it, the more there is for ourselves. Power over makes you feel powerless. Power two makes you feel powerful. So, power over, therefore, is oppression, and power two is leadership. Power two is what leadership is all about. So I have a really low-tech definition of leadership. I think that a leader is somebody who gets something done. And for that, you need your power tools. So, I had no idea there would be such an enormous crowd. So, I'm going to give you worksheets in three different forms. First of all, and we're going to talk about and use some power tools. So first of all, I'm just going to ask you all to so you may have a paper version of this. And if you don't have a paper version, I'm going to put the questions up on the screen so that you can do your own goal setting and planning workshop. And I will tell you a little bit about the power tools while we're passing the papers out. And if you want more, you can go to my website, GloriaFelt.com. If you click on the 9 Ways blog, I have two blogs. One is called Heartfelt and one is called 9 Ways. And the 9 Ways blog is where I talk about women, power, and leadership. And on the 9 Ways blog today, or yesterday, I posted two things, links to two things. I posted a link to this worksheet so that you can use this as an exercise anytime you want to, anytime you feel like you have a problem you want to work out or you have a goal you want to set and work out the steps to get there, you can download this and use it. And you can also download a sheet that has more explanation of the power tools. And then also, if you sign up, you'll see at the top of my website page, you can also get a lengthier power journal so that if you want to go deeper into these questions and have more a more thorough kind of look at how you might use the power tools, you will be able to get it there. So the first question on the worksheet, or if you don't have the worksheet just on a piece of paper, is the question of, when did you know you had the power to? So I'm going to ask you to, while we're filling that out, I wonder if anybody would be willing to stand up at the microphone and share their power to moment. Anybody willing to do that? Anybody have a power to moment? You have a big one? Or a little one? Yes. Go to the microphone if you would. Share it with us. There, on both sides, there are microphones. Yay, yes. It always takes a leader. It takes the first person, right? Okay. All right. Excellent. There are many Power 2 stories like that. Come over to the microphone. This one seems to be working, so let's take this one. You can't hear that one? Oh, no. What if you run? Come up here. This one's working. There's always a way. One of my rules is use what you've got. There's always a way. Thank you. No
I knew that I could survive when I survived the suicide of my husband. And I learned that I can get through anything. If something terrible happens in my life, I can say, heck, I got through that, I can do this too.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
For me, I learned the power that I had to communicate when I was in eighth grade, and I convinced my English teacher to give me another chance and prove that I could do a better job before she talked to my parents. And she did, and I proved her.
All right. You learned young.
Hi, my name is Kathleen. I know I had the power too when I was able to go through a divorce, raise two kids, go to school part-time, and keep a full-time job.
Oh, gosh. Wonder Woman. All right. Does anyone else have a burning desire? Those are incredible. Those are incredible. So what I want to do is I'm going to walk you through the 9 No Excuses power tools. And when I teach this in a larger group, or not a larger group, when I teach this in a larger amount of time, I should say, usually it takes about 2 hours when I do a full workshop. We go a lot more in depth into the power tools, and I can even do it in a whole day. And right now I'm teaching the course, as you heard, at Arizona State University, where I'm taking a whole semester to do it. So there are many different ways to teach this, but I just want to give you a smattering, and I think you'll get the gist of it. So let me come back to that just momentarily. And so power tool number one is know your history, and you can create the future of your choice. And because men have typically been the protagonists of history, women have often not seen themselves in the story, and yet there are so many amazing women. And that's one piece of this. The other piece of it is to know the history of women's advancement, which has been a pattern of stepping forward and then stepping back. And it started with the women's movement in the 1800s. It continued with women's suffrage. When they got the right to vote, they stepped back and said, okay, we're done. And they didn't carry forward with a proactive agenda. So those are the two issues about knowing your history. But if you just know who you are, if you know where you've come from, if you know who your role models are, you know your history, that's when you can create the future of your choice. Actually, I'll tell you another story about this. If you can't see it, you can't be it, they say. I was walking through the subway station near my house recently, and the new Hobbit movie was being advertised, and there was this very long row of these weird-looking little men. And I thought, you know, now I understand why I never really liked the Hobbit stories very much. There are no female characters. And, you know, if you don't see yourself in the story, how can you be that? You just can't. So the second is to define your own terms first before someone else defines you. Because whoever defines the terms of the debate usually wins it. I love this quote from Audre Lorde, who said, if I do not define myself for myself, I would be crunched into other people's fantasies for me and eaten alive. And you know, it's true. And one of the things that we as women do in our speech patterns often is we wait a split second before we talk, and other people take it over. I mean, other people, mostly, usually it's men, who jump right into the fray and take over the conversation. I mean, who has had the experience of going into a meeting and offering an idea and nobody paid attention to it? And 10 minutes later, a man offers the same idea, and it was the best thing since sliced bread. Okay, it is an almost universal experience of women, I find. So define your own terms first before somebody else does. The third power tool is use what you've got. Sort of like we did with the microphone. You know, what you need is usually there. You just have to kind of figure it out and use it. Power tool number 4 frightens many women, but I love it. Embrace controversy. Of course, having led arguably the most controversial social movement in the country, I had to learn to love it. But what I found was it's your friend, because when an issue is controversial, it means it's important to other people, and it means they're listening, and it gives you a chance to actually present your case if you have the courage to put your convictions out there and let people know what you think. And I actually think that if we look at what happened in this last election, whatever side of the political fence you might be on, I think it was the kind of controversial conversation that we don't usually have in this country. And it forced a lot of people to really think and figure out where their values are and then to take action. I mean, the level of voting was greater than it usually has been. So embrace controversy. The fifth one is also kind of fun, carpe the chaos. We have all felt like this woman at some time or another. But the truth is that it is in the places of chaos that change can happen. And I think the economic chaos that we have been through in the last few years have actually opened up a lot of opportunity for women. For example, it wasn't until the financial meltdown that people started asking, what if Lehman Brothers had been Lehman Brothers and Sisters? Would things have been different? And the probability is that things would have been different. So carpe the chaos, my friends. The sixth power tool is wear the shirt. And this is simply about putting your convictions out there for the world to see. And again, we tend to sometimes back away. And the way we get along in the world is sometimes not letting people know who we are and what we think. But authenticity is one of the strongest predictors of leadership. Authenticity is more than anything else often what people who are hiring or people who are electing or people who are simply following are looking for in a leader. And a leader has to wear the shirt. Doesn't mean everybody's going to agree with you. It means you, again, have the courage to put your convictions out there and let people take them as they will. I don't know if you could read what's on my shirt. It's well-behaved women rarely make history. One of my favorites. Power tool number seven. Okay, I don't have to say anything else. That's it. You get it. Create a movement. Because we can't do this alone. We cannot do this alone. We did not get here alone. We stand on other people's shoulders. Other people are going to be standing on ours. The three parts of creating a movement I call sister courage. And they're simple, but not necessarily easy. First one is reach out, be a sister. Ask for help when you need it. Give help to another woman if you think she needs it. And there are brothers who have this same, I mean, we can have sister courage and brother courage as well. The second is to have the courage to wear the shirt and put the issues out there. Do you think your company should have flex time policies? Do you think there's something that needs to be changed in your workplace so that everybody can have a life and earn a living? Well, this is how you make it happen. We now know there is the business case for it, but it won't just happen. People have to join together and have the courage to put those issues out there, get our facts together, and create a strategic plan and take it forward. And that is Sister Courage creating a movement. The eighth power tool is employ every medium. This is another place where women have tremendous power and we don't always use it. Do you know that women are 60% of social media users? Social media is causing revolutions all over the world, or not causing, it's just being the vehicle for revolution all over the world. So since we're 60% of the social media users, we don't even need to worry about not having all those op-ed placements. I mean, we've got the airwaves, we've got the ink, we've got the opportunity. And, you know, it's fun to talk about what we had for dinner and all that, but look at the power we could have when we use our voices together with social media. And finally, tell your story. Tell your story. As Dr. Seuss says, no one is youer than you. And honestly, when I interviewed women, and particularly when I interviewed young women for my book, No Excuses, I can't tell you how many times I heard this request. We need older women to tell us their stories. We need to know your stories. We want to know your successes. We want to know your failures. We want to know what was hard for you. We want to know. We want to know. We want to know. And older women need to learn those same things from younger women as well, because I don't know about, we many of us are working now into our 70s and 80s. We need to know. We need to understand. We need to hear your stories as well. And so we can relate. Your story is your power. Your story is your truth. It is incredibly profound. We learn through stories. and we teach through stories. So those are the power tools. So now I have one closing quote for you, and then I'm going to ask you to take a few moments and actually start to identify what your goal might be that you want to use your worksheet for and how you might use some of these power tools. Katie Orenstein, who founded the Op-Ed Project that I mentioned to you earlier, says it is important for women not just to have the power, not just to have the power to choose, excuse me, but to choose power. So I want you to choose power by taking a look at the worksheet. I'm going to take this back to the worksheet on the screen so that if you don't have one with you, you can use this one. And okay, so there we are. So just, if you haven't already, take just a few minutes to jot down some notes to yourself. And let me see, how's our time doing here? How are we? Okay, all right, we're doing good here, actually. So you can take about 3 minutes to actually fill in your answers to those questions, and then we'll have a conversation about it. How far back did the papers get? Do people on the back row have them? No, okay. So you can use this. You can use what's on the screen then. I was going to go back to the power tool slide, but I'm not going to do that. So when did you know you had the power to? Where was I? How did it feel? Look, what did I learn from it? Where do I struggle the most with embracing my power? What are the blocks, including my beliefs, habits, fears, as well as the external blocks standing in my way? So I'm going to take just a couple of minutes, and then I'll put the other questions up on the screen for the others of you. So then we move on to what is my intention? What's the vision or goal that I want to achieve next in my personal or career life? And which power tools speak to me, to my strengths? Which can help me embrace my power to reach my intention? And what two or three near-term action steps will I commit to take? And finally, because I think this is the piece we often forget when we're leading groups or when we're doing something for ourselves, how will I hold myself accountable for this intention, and how will I tell the world? How will I celebrate when I've achieved it? I mean, how often do we actually achieve a goal and then we just kind of like, okay, I'm done, move right on to the next thing? But take a moment. It's always good to take a moment and reflect, and what did I learn from it, and celebrate a little bit. So if you will, just again, turn to the person next to you. And I realize you haven't finished this, but I wanted to give you this because it is a tool to use the power tools. And you know that you can use it and reuse it, and you can go to my website and you can get more copies of it to keep using it as a tool. Just turn to the person next to you once again and share with them something about what you've written down or what you've said or thought. We've discussed the power too. Now let's move on to what our goals are. So go for it. Goal sharing and give each other some feedback. Okay, I'm going to call time. You've got lunch coming up. You can continue. You've got a break coming up. You can continue. Because I do want to have time for some comments and observations that you've made about yourself or questions that you might have before we close. So thank you all for this amazing, the amazing energy in this room is just almost, it's almost levitating me. So I'm really sorry to stop you. And the lesson I've learned is that it's really hard to try to do all this in an hour. But hopefully it gave you just a little taste of something that will be something concrete you can take away and use and reuse. Does anyone have some insights that they've gained from what they were able to do with their worksheets? First of all, any insights that you'd like to share? Or questions that you'd like to ask about the issue of women and power? It's just had, yes, come on. Sure.
Hi, my name is Stacy, and I run a nonprofit law center for rape and sexual assault victims. And in my many, many years of working with victims of sexual violence, I can tell you that every single one of you has the power to rebuild your life in a way you could never begin to imagine. So I'm very excited for all of you.
Thank you. So there was a question while we were doing the worksheets. Yes, come on up. Good. I was hoping you would ask it.
My name is Lisa. The question that I have is, research that I have read says that women who are forthright, who attempt to seize power, who speak without equivocating, are disliked. So women are in a double bind. They can either not seize power and be ineffective, or they can attempt to seize power or succeed in seizing power and be disliked. Hillary Clinton's being disliked throughout many times in her career, although she's liked more now, is a classic example of that. So I think the steps that are listed are wonderful, but my question is, what do women do about that?
So that's a great question. It's a great question. And my father, who probably would have never realized what he was doing, but he, because I was the oldest child, I was supposed to be the son, you know. And so he used to say to me, "You can do anything your pretty little head desires." And he, it's sort of like, you know, a slightly mixed message, but it definitely, when I got old enough to be able to hear that message, it has helped me a lot. And he had a lot of other little sayings, too. And that question just made me think about one of the things he always used to say, which is, "What are they going to do to you? They can't cook you and eat you." And I don't want to dismiss the difficulties, because they're very real, of the double bind that women are in. And there is always a double bind and a two-edged sword as we are going through the process of making these very profound changes in society, in the workplace, in the home, everywhere. But the fact of the matter is, we do need to learn not to take it so personally. I mean, really, so what? You know, let them not be so happy with you sometimes. I mean, you have to pick and choose. You can't do it all the time. Secondly, any group that is attempting to achieve equality in a world that has not been giving them equality or full personhood has to become bilingual, culturally bilingual. We have to learn to speak two languages. We have to speak boy and girl. We have to understand how the male framed and oriented culture speaks and works. We have to understand that so that we can speak enough in that language, but at the same time, retain our own authentic voice. It is not easy. It is not easy. But as, again, I really think that as the research becomes more and more, makes it more and more evident that it is the very characteristics that women bring into the workplace and into the discussion and into politics that make things better for everyone, that the authentic voices of women will come to be appreciated more. And your example of Hillary Clinton was a really good one. It's so complicated, and I don't know if any of you have read Rebecca Traister's really great book, Big Girls Don't Cry, about her own issues with Hillary Clinton and deciding who she was going to support and her observations about what happened in that 2008 primary. But I think the fact that Hillary Clinton was willing to stay in there and hang in there through all of the slings and arrows, through the media treatment that was just, it's pretty bad to Sarah Palin, too. The media treatment of women in politics is quite dismal. But the very fact that she was willing to hang in there has now created a role model for every other woman coming forward that, you can take it, you can deal with it, you can be strong through it, and by God, on the other end, you can come out being probably the most respected politician in the whole country. So Hillary Clinton herself is a pretty good object lesson in that. I'm not telling you it's easy, but as they say, if it were easy, they would have sent lesser people to do it. So we are women. Hear us roar. We can do it. We can do it. I think I saw a hand up somewhere over here. Yes, come on, run on up. This will probably be our last question because we just have a couple of minutes. Okay, all right.
So I was actually just discussing this at work last week and nobody would pick it up with me, which was really interesting. It was an email thread with just women. We were all here today. And I don't know if they didn't feel it or if they didn't know what to say. And my point was that the answer so often comes back as, be more like a man. But that's not what we're really trying to do, is it? And I think that's what you said. That's not what we're trying to do.
Let me see if I understand you. Say that again so I...
Be more like a man.
No, be more like... Oh, no.
Right. And that's not what you're saying. So I was actually raising my hand going, no, don't say it, please. But like you said, we need to bring the compassion and the feminine qualities while we're standing toe-to-toe with these men and continue to be leaders. Currently, my boss and I are butting heads because he's having trouble accepting hearing anything from me. But I'm not going to back down from him. I might shut up for 5 minutes, but I'm not going to stop. And I just wanted to share that, and now I feel really dumb.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's right. It really does turn out that actually being women is what makes the difference, and it's why it is women's moment. No excuses. I will tell you that what we can imagine the most is that the world is waiting for you. The world is waiting for you. I want you to embrace your power to lead and live with intention. And I thank you so much for being here today and for your attention. Thank you. Thank you.